The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, do that, please. Over the weekend, you know the address, td@kpcg.fm. I'm coming to you live from Edstone, right in front of our new mic stand. Yesterday, we had a little trouble with our mic stand as it was slowly but surely falling beneath my little lectern here. And so, if you heard the beginning of the program, you might have heard some of that background noise. We got it sorted out, and now everything's good. I can adjust the stand, and it's not going to fall apart on me right in the middle of a live program. We don't want that to happen because we have a lot to get to today, a packed show for sure. We're going to talk about some of the stats for this very program. We try to update you frequently on the television response, but we'll update you on some of the listener stats that we have for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Quite a few emails that I'd like to get to coming up in the second segment, especially coming from Canada. So all of you Canadians can look forward to several email responses coming from your fellow listeners. I'd like to get into quite a few sound bites today as well. Theresa May gave a speech here in the UK at the Conservative Conference on Wednesday, and quite a large response from the conservative media after that particular speech. We'll get into some of what she said and talk about the ever-expanding government, the size of government here in the UK and also in the United States. So, as I say, a lot to get to. Truthfully, we need 2 hours for today's program. We've got that much material, but we appreciate you staying with us for 1 hour. I know what kind of a time commitment that is, but you do get a lot packed into 50 to 55 minutes if you listen to talk radio in the States. I think about an hour's worth of radio programming. Well, if you subtract the commercials, it knocks it right down to 37 minutes. And then if you've listened to some of the radio hosts, even in the midst of their commentary, they break into commercials that they read themselves, sometimes two in an hour. So you knock those commercials off within the program, and you're probably down to about 30 minutes of content. And then added to that, or taking away from that, the callers that call into the program, nothing against those callers or the comments that they make, but if you subtract the phone calls, you're down to about 20 or 25 minutes of actual content over the course of a 60-minute program. That just shows how much you're getting for this investment you're making to listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show or some of the other programs on KPCG for an hour or for a half hour without all of the constant interruptions. And even those few that we have, we need a break every now and again. But even those promos that we run, they're produced in-house, they advertise things that we want to give away to you for free. There's no radio station like it on Earth today. What a blessing it is to disseminate God's truth to an ever-growing audience and to do it with so much packed into really a short period of time. Well, the other day, Israel announced construction plans for a new neighborhood that would include 98 homes. They're going to build this this section of the neighborhood adjacent to the city of Shiloh, which I've visited several times over the years. It's right in the middle of the West Bank, across the way from Nablus. Nablus is a Palestinian city. Shiloh is what's, I don't know the actual name of the kibbutz or the settlement, as so many in the Western media call it. But in any event, it's right near Nablus, and Shiloh, of course, is populated by Jews, and so they're looking to expand that neighborhood for more Jewish residences. And before I get to the U.S. reaction, the unhinged reaction coming from the United States, let me first go back to a couple of statements that Benjamin Netanyahu recently made at the United Nations. This is clip number 11.
Year after year, I've stood at this very podium and slammed the UN for its obsessive bias against Israel. And the UN deserved every scathing word for the disgrace of the General Assembly that last year passed 20 resolutions against the Democratic State of Israel and a grand total of 3 resolutions against all the other countries on the planet. Israel 20, rest of the world 3.
Israel 20 and the rest of the world 3. That's the resolutions coming out from the United Nations. And this obsessive bias, that's Benjamin Netanyahu in his speech on September 22nd, just a couple of weeks ago. All of these resolutions against the Democratic State of Israel and the rest of the world, well, they pretty much get a free pass, oh, but not Israel. Israel's the problem. Israel's the reason that we can't move forward with peace in the region. Netanyahu went on to make this statement as well, clip 12.
And what about the joke called the UN Human Rights Council, which each year condemns Israel more than all the countries of the world combined? As women are being systematically raped, murdered, sold into slavery across the world, which is the only country that the UN's Commission on Women chose to condemn this year? Yep, you guessed it, Israel. Israel, where women fly fighter jets, lead major corporations, head universities, preside twice over the Supreme Court, and have served as Speaker of the Knesset and Prime Minister.
All of that, and yet, which nation is condemned? Which nation is condemned by the United Nations? You guessed it. You guessed it, Israel. And which nation, amid all of the events in the Middle East right now, which nation is condemned by the United States State Department for building 98 homes? Yep, you guessed it. That would be Israel. On Wednesday, the State Department released these strong words of rebuke for Israel. Listen to these. They said, "We strongly condemn the Israeli government's recent decision to advance a plan that would create a significant new settlement deep in the West Bank." Well, in fact, it would just expand one there at Shiloh. But in any event, this is something the United States government strongly condemns. Proceeding with this new settlement, which could include up to 300 units, would further damage, notice all the words used here, damage the prospects for a two-state solution. The retroactive authorization of nearby illegal outposts or redrawing of local settlement boundaries does not change the fact that this approval contradicts previous public statements by the government of Israel that it had no intention of creating new settlements. Why this contradicts statements Israel's made previous to this. Israel isn't being truthful. Israel isn't being honest. It says here, it's deeply troubling in the wake of Israel and the U.S. concluding an unprecedented agreement on military assistance. I think that amounted to $38 billion, that agreement, military assistance, that the United States went ahead and followed through on, largely because Israel's freaking out over the Iran nuke deal. And so here's the United States trying to calm Israel down. Look, we'll help you out a little bit too. Not $150 billion worth, like we did with Iran, but we'll give you $38 billion in this arms deal. But now the State Department says, look, this is deeply troubling, especially because of this deal we just did with you. Look, we've reached out to you, and this is the thanks we get. These are 98 structures in Shiloh. These are 98 homes in the middle of the West Bank, where hundreds of Jews already live in that very community. And we're deeply troubled by this, so much so that we strongly condemn it. We strongly condemn it. It's deeply troubling in the wake of Israel and the U.S. concluding an unprecedented agreement on military assistance designed to further strengthen Israel's security, that Israel would take a decision so contrary to its long-term security interest in a peaceful resolution of its conflict with the Palestinians. Furthermore, it is disheartening. It is disheartening that while Israel and the world mourn the passing of President Shimon Peres, and leaders from the U.S. and other nations prepare to honor one of the great champions of peace, plans were advanced that would seriously undermine the prospects for the two-state solution that he so passionately supported. I mean, even Peres wouldn't have wanted this. The State Department said such moves will only draw condemnation from the international community, distance Israel from many of its partners, and further call into question Israel's commitment to achieving a negotiated peace. Now, I would venture to say, there's no way of me fact-checking this, but I would venture to say that in the course of the past 7.5 years, you have never read a more strongly worded statement from the State Department quite like this one. And who is it aimed at? Yep, you guessed it. The little nation of Israel, the lone democracy in the heart of a region that's gone up in flames, a region that's on fire. 98 houses in the little community around Shiloh, which, by the way, if you know your Old Testament history, that happens to be where the ark was situated for a time. But never mind that history. That history doesn't matter. What matters is that if we push for a two-state solution, that Palestinian state, presumably the West Bank area, it has to be Jew-free. There can't be any Jews in that region for the Palestinians to be happy. And so we can't add homes there. We can't put any more houses there. And when we do put houses there, or when the Jews put them there, it elicits the strongest condemnation coming from the U.S. State Department. This is what the White House spokesman, Josh Earnest, had to say on Wednesday, clip 13.
The actions of the Israeli government in announcing this settlement undermine the pursuit of peace.
These actions undermine the peace process. these homes, these 98 houses. You've heard these kinds of complaints before, but this surely must be the strongest worded condemnation yet to come from this administration. Never mind when Palestinian construction on Jewish-owned property. Never mind when that goes on. Never mind why they're adding those homes. Never mind the fact that Shiloh, it's mentioned there prominently in the Old Testament. Never mind any of that. This has undermined the peace process, the pursuit of peace. Not what's happening in Syria, not what's happened in Iraq, not what's happening in Yemen, not what's happened in Egypt or Libya or Iran. None of that has been strongly condemned by the United States State Department. None of it. But 98 houses go up. And where do you find the strong condemnation is aimed for? Well, you guessed it. It's aimed right at Israel. It's interesting, on the same day, at least it was the same press conference, there was this story about Russia and its provocative tweet, basically threatening the United States. Basically threatening, even if it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, threatening the White House spokesman. Fox News reports in a provocative tweet Wednesday, the Russian embassy in Washington posted a side-by-side photo of White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest and the Russian S-300 missile system. They had the missile system pointed at Mr. Earnest, a picture of Josh Earnest. It says, with the military apparatus pointed toward the image of Earnest, a caption says, Russia wants the system because they, quote, never really know what kind of assistance terrorists might get. It says, the tweet says, Russia will take every defensive measure necessary to protect their personnel in Syria. It says, the tweet comes after the U.S. and Russia suspended direct talks over Syria operations, and amid heightened tensions between the two countries over the bloody civil war in which Vladimir Putin's forces are backing Bashar Assad while the U.S. tries to focus on taking out ISIS. Asked what message the Russians might have been trying to send, Josh Earnest tried to laugh off the social media salvo. Well, here's how that exchange played out on Wednesday during the press briefing. This is clip 14.
Did you have a comment on why they would be posting you next to the line, every defensive measure necessary will be taken to protect our personnel stationed in Syria from a terrorist threat?
I have no idea what message they were trying to send.
On a more
if they would like better pictures, though, I'm happy to send some over.
Hopefully without an S-300 next
Right, hopefully without an S-300 pointed at your head. And then everyone has a good laugh. It's a joke. It's a joke. And if Iran does anything belligerent, if they back terrorism, if they fire off ballistic missiles, there's no strong condemnation, you can be sure. There's all kinds of justification for those acts. The South China Sea, China threatening U.S. diplomats, that doesn't affect the pursuit of peace at all. Russia devouring Ukraine, threatening other neighbors in Eastern Europe, no threat to the pursuit of peace. But with little Israel, 98 homes, 98 homes for Jewish families to live in poses a grave threat to the peace process. 98 homes, we should add, in Israel. I mean, it's Israel's territory. Until there ever is a two-state side-by-side in that region, it's Israel's land. It's unbelievable, really. There's a spirit behind it, as we've talked about before. But in what kind of universe is the State Department living, or the United Nations, for that matter? 20 resolutions against the State of Israel, and three against the rest of the world. 20-3. You talk about an obsessive bias. And then the strongest condemnation reserved for the little Israeli state, coming from the UN, coming from the United States, coming from Europe, coming from the Middle East, coming from Israel's neighbors. You can sure see why the prophecies say that Israel's going to reach out to the Assyrians in desperation. There's nowhere else to go. And so they turn to one of their greatest historic enemies of all. There's nowhere else to turn but to the Assyrians. Well, they should turn to God, as my father's written before. They should turn to their maker. But coming back to all of these provocative acts, well, if it's Russia, if it's Iran, if it's China, we can brush those aside or laugh it off. Associated Press yesterday, by some sobering measures, the case for Obama, the peacemaker, is difficult to make. Analysts who track conflict, refugee populations, terrorist attacks, and political upheaval say the world has only become less peaceful during Obama's tenure, a trend that began just before he took office. So just the last 8 years or so, instances of terrorism have peaked. Deaths in battle around the world are at a 25-year high. And the number of refugees and displaced people has reached a level not seen in 60 years. According to the 2016 Global Peace Index, a report on international stability produced by the nonpartisan think tank, the Institute for Economic and Peace. It says the researchers attributed the trends to the expanded warfare in the Middle East and North Africa and broad ripples across the region and in Europe. And yet, in listening to the State Department, we're supposed to believe that the big obstacle to peace is 98 homes in the middle of, well, a desert-like region, right around all of these archaeological ruins in Shiloh, the heart of the West Bank. Just look at what this administration gets upset about. I mean, that's a story in itself. And what it turns a blind eye to. Very revealing. It's an administration that believes, sincerely, that climate change poses the greatest threat to this world. And it's an administration that believes in its heart of hearts that the intractable peace process in the Middle East is all Israel's fault. Israel is to blame. We strongly condemn. We strongly condemn the Israeli government's recent decision. This has caused damage. This is illegal. This contradicts what they've said. They have lied to us. We're deeply troubled. This is disheartening. This undermines the peace process, says the State Department on Wednesday. This from the American Interest. says the press does its best to avert its eyes from the dispiriting spectacle, but President Obama's foreign policy legacy is withering away before our very eyes. Even as the clock runs down on the most disastrous American foreign policy presidency since World War II, one hopes that he'll take some stands. Even now, President Obama could help his successor by reversing course on some of his key decisions and laying the foundation for a revival of American power and prestige. But when you listen to this administration, when you listen to the State Department, when you listen to the spokespeople, well, it's never been better in this world. It's never been better. And climate change is the real threat. And, well, if there is anyone to blame for some of the messiness that you see, it's Israel. We strongly condemn the Israeli government's recent decision to build 98 homes. Notice this one from the New York Times. This came out yesterday, I believe. The Obama administration is delaying deportation proceedings for recent immigrants in cities across the United States, allowing more than 56,000 of those who fled Central America since 2014 to remain in the country legally for several more years. This is from the New York Times, writing about the Obama administration's approach to the immigration crisis. They're not deporting them like they said that they would. The shift, notice this, the shift, because this is different than what was said. This contradicts what was said earlier. This contradicts statements that were made earlier, you see. The shift, described in interviews with immigration lawyers, federal officials, and current and former judges, has been occurring without public attention for months. It amounts to an unannounced departure from the administration's widely publicized pronouncements that cases tied to the so-called surge of 2014 would be rushed through the immigration courts in an effort to deter more Central Americans from entering the United States illegally. Well, there was a big crisis in 2014. Remember the big surge? And then all of the talk immediately after it. Look, we'll take care of this. We're the government. We'll talk more about big government in just a bit. We'll take care of this. We'll send them right back. We want to send a message to Central America so that more don't come. And now we find out that those deportation proceedings, they've been delayed. And that's allowed as many as 56,000 who fled Central America since 2014. That's allowed them to stay in the United States for several more years. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll update you on some of the more recent stats regarding this particular program, and we'll also get through some of your emails that have come in over the last few days. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Did it ever strike you as most unusual that the great God should have raised up the ancient nation Israel to be his chosen people? Consider these seemingly paradoxical facts. God says he is not a respecter of persons. Is he then a respecter of nations? Does he have a favorite? Did you ever realize that God denied his chosen people salvation, save only their prophets? That the chosen nation was given only material and national promises? That God's Holy Spirit was inaccessible to them? The Holy Bible is indeed a book that is primarily about one people, the people of Israel. But why? This astounding truth is a mystery totally unknown by any religion, by Christianity, by even Judaism. It is thoroughly explained in this book, Mystery of the Ages. It is an intriguing story. The mystery of Israel has great significance in God's purpose for all peoples. One cannot understand the real purpose and incredible potential of man without this vital knowledge. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
We've talked often about the SoundCloud figures, and I guess if anything, the figures on SoundCloud the past 4 or 5 weeks have dipped slightly below the peak. I guess back in June and July, we were getting up over 1,000 plays per day, and hasn't taken a huge hit. It's just under 1,000 at this rate that we're going now, but from some of these other stats that we're getting, we're seeing a nice increase in the number of people tuning into the stream live, listening to the program live, not counting those who actually listen to their radios in the North Edmond area. But we're averaging about 150 to 180 people per day. Every morning, if you're in North America or here in the UK, it would be the early afternoon or whatever time it would be for where you happen to be on this earth. But about 150 to 180 that listen to that live stream, either at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com, and then another 100 or so that listen to some of those live replays that play on the radio station. I think there's 3 or 4 of them during the course of the 24-hour cycle. Added to that, the podcast downloads, those that are loading the program onto their iPhone or their smartphone, their device, that's averaging about 250 to 280 per program. So that's another 200-300. And then added to the 1,000 or so that we have each day on SoundCloud, it pretty much amounts to anywhere from 1,500 to over 2,000 people listening to each individual show, about 9,000 or so, maybe 10,000 over the course of a week. So those are some encouraging numbers that have been coming in. It, of course, started very, very small just a year and a half ago, and we're not stretching into the millions just yet, but we're certainly seeing some nice growth. A few emails, this one from, as I said, we've got a handful here from Canada, this one from Calgary. It says, as a Canadian, it's great to hear so many Canadian people writing in. It makes me feel like I'm not the only one in my city of Calgary. I've not attended any congregations yet, and I'm not fully confident nor familiar on what to do on God's holy days. However, I've set aside the seventh day of the week as my rest day in order to serve the weekly Sabbath. It says, every day after work, I go to the kpcg.fm website and start listening to the latest or last shows posted through the SoundCloud streamer. I've been blessed with wireless headphones, which allow me to walk around my suite without having to be tied in front of my computer. A new episode always brings me joy. It says, it's amazing how I've learned more about world and biblical history through the Trumpet and KPCG in a few short years than all the years combined that I've been through the Canadian education system. It says most of the useful information taught by the brethren in this church have never been taught anywhere else in my life. For that, I'm very happy and thankful. So that's an excellent response coming in from Calgary, Alberta, in the heart of Canada there. This one from the east side, Newfoundland. Just wanted to say thank you. I still look forward to each day to what will be discussed during the Trumpet Daily. This week has been only 3 days, and this came in yesterday afternoon. I missed the Monday program for traveling, it says. This week has only been 3 days, but great topics that truly make us think. This one here from Regina, Saskatchewan. Thank you, Mr. Fleury. What an excellent program and so inspiring. It even inspired my dusting to be extra vigorous. How about that? Adding some oomph to the household chores. Another response here, it says, you need to do more shows along these lines about God's Holy Spirit and true conversion. That's coming in from, in response to yesterday's show. Another one here, this time from the United States. It says, thank you so much for all of your messages on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's a great added supplement to my daily Bible study. I live in the U.S., and I listen to your show daily by the Internet, for which I'm very grateful. This one here comes in from Uganda, or Uganda, how do you say that? It's in Africa. Thank you again for this report on Deutsche Bank. This brings to mind a few years back when I was a resident in Dubai. I was in the presence of an investment banker when it was announced that Germany was recalling its gold bullion from the U.S. and Great Britain. It was a vast amount. And I remember this banker saying that this act was in preparation for a financial crisis yet to come. An interesting comment that this listener heard in Dubai, of all places. Another one here. Thank you for going through the process of conversion and God's Spirit leading all true begotten sons. I'm so thankful for this program, for my education continuing. I'm reading some from the Federalist Papers. Thank you for playing the speech of Mr. Antonin Scalia explaining the Constitution to the student lawyers. I understand better about the Constitution and our fading government. Another one here from Suriname, all over the place. Several from Canada, but as is always the case, they come in. A small audience, but they come in from all over the world. From Suriname, it says, very inspiring TD episode today, especially to listen to how God has used the ambassador of world peace, Herbert Armstrong. His effect on the world is tremendously encouraging. That's in response to the show, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday, I forget which, where we went through that that program from the 1980s where Mr. Armstrong was talking about the seven laws of success in front of that huge Japanese corporation, thousands of employees, receiving the seven laws of success translated into Japanese. Another one here from Toronto. It says, my wife and I catch your 7 p.m. repeat program most evenings over dinner, and thank you and all those behind you for your excellent work. Far from stifling dinner conversation, the things we learn provoke plenty of comments and conversation. I immensely enjoy the airtime you give Mr. Armstrong. After all these years, nobody can deny what he plainly stated decades ago when you air his words again. It's then quite obvious he held the Elijah office. Truly, all things were restored and have amounted to a solid spiritual foundation for the spiritual temple of God. And then one final one here coming from Alaska. It says, I would like to say today's program had good timing. It reminded me of the need to have great ambition. This is in response to the one we had last Friday, where we talked about the autobiography and the ambition, that spark of ambition for Mr. Armstrong. And this says here, honestly, we can't get anywhere in life unless we earnestly desire to go somewhere or accomplish something and are willing to put in the effort. I've just started the process of conversion, and this ingredient is very much needed in my life. Thank you for covering this subject today. You're listening to Stephen Fleury and some of the listener feedback right here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send in your comments, your thoughts about this program or any of the programs produced here on KPCG, just send those messages to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
I think you all know that I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
That's, of course, Ronald Reagan from 1986, one of his more memorable quips. The 9 most terrifying words in the English language. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Beware the government when it shows up to help. Of course, Mr. Reagan was a great champion of reducing the size and scope of the federal government to get the government out of the way so that that entrepreneurial spirit could rise to the surface, so that that economic engine, that powerhouse, the United States, could experience a revival. And I think many would agree that's what happened during the 1980s. Notice what President Reagan also had to say. This is upon coming into office from his inaugural address in 1981. This is clip one.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. It is time to reawaken this industrial giant, to get government back within its means, and to lighten our punitive tax burden. And these will be our first priorities, and on these principles there will be no compromise.
No compromise. He reduced the taxes, he reduced the size of government, he got rid of a lot of regulations, and the industrial giant reawakened. And you know who was right on board with him? Lady Thatcher. Margaret Thatcher, right here in the UK. One of her more memorable statements was that the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. It doesn't work. Well, that brings us to this speech by Theresa May from the Conservative Conference on Wednesday. Let me just read a little bit about it first from Fortune Magazine. It says here, for the last 40 years, Britain's Conservative Party has essentially been the party of Margaret Thatcher. Freewheeling, free market, globalist, not anymore. It says here, Theresa May, the second woman to be both Tory leader and Prime Minister of the UK, signaled the clearest possible break with the Iron Lady's legacy Wednesday, turning the party sharply to the left in an effort to occupy and redefine a new center ground in the country's politics amid the uncertainties of the post-Brexit era. So here comes this lengthy speech from Miss May, and she's taking the country sharply to the left. She comes out of the same party that Margaret Thatcher did some 40 years ago. Here's a snippet from her speech on Wednesday, clip two.
So today I want to set out my plans for a Britain where everyone plays by the same rules and every person has the opportunity to be all they want to be. It's a plan to tackle the unfairness and injustice that divides us so that we may build a new united Britain rooted in the centre ground. A plan that will mean government stepping up, righting wrongs, challenging vested interests, taking big decisions, doing what we believe to be right, getting the job done. Because that's the good that government can do, and it's what I'm in this for. To stand up for the weak and to stand up to the strong. And to put the power of government squarely at the service of ordinary working class people.
It's a far cry from what President Reagan and Margaret Thatcher were saying back in the 1980s. Look, government's been the problem. Let's get government out of the way. Let's reduce the tax burden on people. Let's reawaken the industrial giant. The Economist had this to say about her speech on Wednesday. It says, mainstream politicos in Britain have long held these truths to be self-evident. The left won the social battles of the past decades. The right won the economic ones. The resulting consensus combines free market liberalism with broadly permissive cultural instincts. But on October 5th, Theresa May strode up to the podium at the Conservative Party conference, awkwardly waved at the crowd, cleared her throat, and unceremoniously drove a bulldozer through those assumptions. On the economy, the Conservatives are moving left. Parts of Mrs. May's speech recalled Ed Miliband, Labor's previous leader, whose market interventionism earned him the anti-business reputation. She went on about bosses who do not look after their staff, companies that do not pay enough tax, and utility firms that rip off consumers, even hinting at sort of meddling in energy markets. That one Mr. Miliband, particular barbs. Her government, she said, would identify the industries that are of strategic value to our economy and boost them through policies on trade, tax, infrastructure, skills, training, and research and development. It's like in the United States. This sort of populist, nationalist uprising, where you have many now from the what's traditionally been the conservative wing that are saying, well, hey, these social handouts have been going on for so long, it's about time that we get some of this. Listen to what Ms. May had to say from her speech Wednesday, clip 3.
It's easy to dismiss them. Easy to say that all you want from government is for it to get out of the way. But a change has got to come. It's time to remember the good that government can do. Time for a new approach that says, while government doesn't have all the answers, government can and should be a force for good. That the state exists to provide what individual people, communities, and markets cannot, and that we should employ the power of government for the good of the people. Time to reject the ideological templates provided by the socialist left and the libertarian right, and to embrace a new centre ground in which government steps up and not back to act on behalf of us all.
She's describing this as being the new center ground, but really, as these articles bring out, this is a sharp turn to the left. A sharp turn left for the UK, which already has a massive, oversized bureaucracy at the top. Big government. The Telegraph said this in this present crisis. Well, it actually quotes President Reagan, and it mentions Lady Thatcher making it their mission back in the 80s to unleash enterprise, to cut taxes, to privatize industries, to empower families. That was just 40 years ago. Fired up on the ideals, or rather the ideas of liberation economists, they understood, Thatcher and Reagan that is, that the domestic problems of the day, weak growth, crippling unemployment, and generalized decline, were the fault of misguided government intervention. It says 30 years later, free market ideas are in retreat. The drift began well after, or rather well before, the financial crisis, and was at first camouflaged by the ongoing march of globalization, technology, and consumerism. New labor, increased spending and intervention. Likewise, George W. Bush, who also subsidized subprime mortgages. Central bankers injected moral hazard into everything. And David Cameron introduced new workers' rights, property levies, and environmental rules. Environmental rules, it says. He increased far more taxes than he cut, and he bashed the bankers. It says Sir John Major's government was the last to make, if falteringly, the case for markets, competition, and choice. And Michael Howard was the last Tory leader to advocate capitalism. It's in this context, the Telegraph writes, that Theresa May's speech needs to be understood. It was an emphatic repudiation of the Thatcher-Reagan economic worldview. It was as emphatic as possible to get without actually naming them, the Telegraph says. Time and again, she said that government was the solution, not the problem. She believes in a large, powerful, aggressively interventionist state that can, she feels, regenerate the country and protect ordinary workers. And, well, she's not alone. There's quite a few leaders, politicians across the pond that believe the very same thing. President Obama, earlier this year, he was in Flint, Michigan, after the botch of the local authorities there, or the botch they made of the water crisis that was going on. And of course, he came in on the white horse to fix everything. This is what President Obama had to say in Flint, Michigan, clip 4.
And this kind of thinking, this myth that government's always the enemy, that forgets that our government is us. It's us. You know, it's an extension of us, ourselves. You know, that attitude is as corrosive to our democracy as the stuff that resulted in lead in your water.
That's poison, to say that the federal government should be downsized, that the bureaucracy should be removed. That's corrosive. We can't get into that kind of thinking. He said in the same speech, clip 5.
We got to fix the mindset that only leaves people cynical about our government. Our government is us. Of us, by us, for us, the people.
Our government is us, he kept saying. We're all the government. This massive, bloated, debt-ridden organization headquartered out of the capital of the U.S., Washington, D.C. It's us, all of us. About 70% of this administration's budget is pretty much writing checks to people, transferring wealth, as they say. And it's not even transferring wealth. It's running up charges on the national credit card. But about half the people in the United States, they're receiving some kind of government benefit. Robert Morley reported on this last year. It's probably more now. 153 million people receiving some form of government benefit. America's already a huge nanny state. Same with the UK. And what do these politicians want to do more of? Spend, spend, spend. You could apply Netanyahu's statement in this case. Yep, you guessed it. Run up the bills. Run up the charges. It's so predictable. And like I say, it's on both sides of the aisle now, clearly. Here's what Hillary Clinton had to say in one of her debates. This is from, I think, just a year ago, clip 6.
We should not be paralyzed. We should not be paralyzed by the Republicans and their constant refrain, big government this, big government that, except for what they want to impose on the American people. I know we can afford it because we're going to make the wealthy pay for it. That is
Thank
the
you.
Way to get
Senator,
it done.
Senator.
I know we can afford it, all these new programs, because we'll just raise taxes. We'll just make the rich people pay for it. That's the way to get it done. Of course we could get this done. We could just keep spending. Never mind $19, $20 trillion in debt. Never mind all of the unfunded liabilities. Just keep spending. New programs. New programs for everyone. Bernie Sanders, we know about his popularity. He didn't win the nomination, but he came close. Here's what he said, clip 7.
What I believe is the United States, in fact, should join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all people. Our Medicare for All single-payer proposal will save the average middle-class family $5,000 a year. I do believe that in the year 2016, we have to look in terms of public education as colleges, as part of public education, making public colleges and universities tuition-free. I believe that when real unemployment is close to 10% and when our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our water systems, Flint, Michigan comes to mind, our wastewater plants, our rail, our airports in many places are disintegrating, yeah, we can create 13 million jobs by rebuilding our infrastructure at a cost of $1 trillion.
But my question is, how big would government be? Would there be any limit on the size role of government?
Of course there will be a limit. But when today you have massive levels of income and wealth inequality, when the middle class is disappearing, You have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth. Yes, in my view, the government of a democratic society has a moral responsibility to play a vital role in making sure that all of our people have a decent standard of living.
Of course, we'll put a limit on it, but first we've got to give free health care to everyone, free Medicare, to single payer, free college tuition for young people. We've got to rebuild the rail lines. We've got to rebuild the airports. We've got to make sure every single person has a good standard of living, a decent standard of living. Lots of freebies. How do you pay for it? Well, you just charge it to the rich. Not to be outdone, I mean, here's the Republican side in the U.S., Donald Trump. Here's what he said earlier this year, clip 8.
Well, the greatest function of all by far is security for a nation. I would also say health care. I would also say education. I mean, there are many, many things.
Many, 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 many things that we've got to add to the budget. And he has promised to do big things. That's why one reason why he's so popular. He's going to keep Americans safe. He's going to keep out the illegals. He's going to build up a massive wall, a wall that keeps getting higher and higher. He's going to rebuild the military. He's going to protect the working class from competition coming from illegal immigrants or from unfair offshore competition. He's going to rescue America's social insurance programs, Social Security, and others. He's recently promised government-funded maternity leave for women. He's promised to subsidize out-of-home child care. He's going to use the power of big government to interfere with free markets, to impose tariffs that would punish companies that are moving factories offshore. He's going to impose tariffs that punish countries that use what he believes to be abusive trade practices. He's got the solutions, just like all of these world leaders. They've got all the solutions. They don't know, as President Reagan understood in the early 1980s, that the solution to this crisis, it's not government. Government is the problem. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, coming to about the halfway point of my notes for today. I did correctly predict that I had enough material for two programs. I'm already over time, but we can do that because we don't have all of these advertisers that are demanding to play their commercials in between our shows. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to send us an email. We'll see you again next week.